Hi, today is July 15th, 2015. This is Mobile News Podcast number 213, entitled Goss Award, my good friend John Westfall. And today we have stupid smartwatch things to share.
Very stupid smartwatch things. Things that our stupid smartwatches are giving us pause to stop and talk about.
Yeah, and that my smartwatch actually did pause, which was the problem. So, woke up, I have a Moto 360, it's the first generation, the old ones. I got it in, 2015, I think. It's about 2 years old now. And it sits in the charger. I put in the charger every night before I go to sleep. And I wake up and take it off the charger. And this morning I took it off the charger, and it said it was at 100%, and that's fine, of course. But then that's all it ever said. It wouldn't respond to touch. I tried calling my own phone to see if it would wake it up and give me a alert that I'm getting an image, and or a call, and no, it just didn't want to do anything. So I had to, it's been pretty reliable, darn reliable. And so I thought, well, now what? So I kind of did the usual thing that you want to do. I held it down for 10 seconds and that didn't seem to work. So I resorted to something I really hate doing, and that's looking up documentation.
I hate that too.
Yeah, so I looked at it. You got to hold it on 30 seconds. And let me tell you, holding a watch crown for 30 seconds is a painful experience. I should have used like some, rigid object or something, like a quarter or something to press down on it. But of course, I'm too stupid to do that. So that didn't happen. So after I've got an indentation in my thumb, it did reset. And then its charge was like 52%. I guess it was, just running. Probably was in some kind of endless loop. And so I had to put it back on the charger. Fortunately, it's Saturday morning, and I don't need to go anywhere right away. So it's charging as we speak. Anyway, that's my stupid smartwatch thing. And do you have a stupid smartwatch thing?
Oh, I have a stupid one, too. So today is National Parks Day, and Apple has decided to issue a special badge if you go out and do a little bit of sadistic exercise. Most people don't think this is anything much. In fact, it really wasn't too much other than I just don't do it that often. But this morning I got up and went for a 3.5 mile walk in order to get a shiny badge that we can add as an image to the show notes and post it. But it took me 1 hour and 20 minutes, and I got it done. I'm not so sure if it was a great idea, but I had to do it early because, as you'll see from the screenshot that we can post, it was 83 degrees out, and that was at 8:46 to 10 o'clock in the morning. So okay, if I waited any longer, it's already 90 here right now. So.
Now, do you have to have an Apple Watch, or can if you just have an Apple phone with the health app running, does that
That's work? A really good question. I'm not sure if you can. I don't think you can if you don't have an Apple Watch, because I don't think you can activate the workout feature on just a regular iPhone.
Oh, so you have to activate. It's not just wearing the watch and walking. You have to activate.
No, it has to actually be a real workout that you tell it that you're doing. So
okay. That sounds reasonable. Or not.
But yeah, that was my stupid smartwatch thing today.
Yeah.
So that, and then I apparently burned a bunch of calories, and then I went and had a very calorie-intensive drink at a local coffee shop, and so I'm probably at net zero right now.
Well, at least you're not plus whatever, right? So, and you had a drink you enjoyed.
That's true.
Without feeling guilty.
So yeah, that was my stupid smartwatch thing for the day.
Well, that doesn't sound too stupid. Mine is stupid because it actually broke. But and I hurt my thumb. So I'm going to vote that mine was stupider, but there you go. Okay, here's something not stupid, but I know we had a little bit of a debate of whether this thing's going to survive or not. And that's Google's, we talked about this a while back. Google introduced their backup and sync for Google Photos and Google Drive combined this past week for Mac OS and for Windows. I haven't installed either one yet because I hardly, I'm usually using a Chromebook, so... no need to do that. But at any rate, so Google Photos, everybody's probably familiar with. It does the automatic backup of your photos. I've got over 110,000 photos in mine, I think, now. So I'm really hoping Google doesn't decide one day to, you know, discontinue the service because I'm dead in the water if that ever happens. And Google Drive, I don't know. I guess Google Drive kind of had an automatic backup where you sync it with your PC or Mac and it would back up files in the specified sync drive. But now it's combined. So presumably be easier. I think I might set it up for my... Well, I'm debating how to set it up for my daughter, whether to use Microsoft OneDrive using Office 365, where she has a lot more storage, actually, or Google's Backup and Sync, which is more familiar to her. So, thinking about that one. You going to try it out, John? Do you use Google Photos? I forgot already.
I use Google Photos. I have all my photo archives in Google Photos, so... but I don't use Google for much else. So I do use OneDrive for the majority of my cloud storage. I still have some things in Dropbox because more apps on iOS interface with Dropbox for storage than OneDrive. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see how this goes. I just really hope that we lose no features with Google Photos.
Yeah, really. And they do seem to be adding features to Google Photos, which is nice. One I heard about, but I haven't tried, is apparently now it will do things with your dog or cat photos. So you, your cat passed away, as I recall. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I've got plenty of photos of her.
Yeah.
So I can find, I'll have to go play around with that because we always joke that my cat was the most photographed cat on the planet. I think every pet lover, I mean, your rabbits are the most photographed rabbits on the planet.
They pose.
So I'll have to play around with that.
they know how to pose when they see a camera now. It's pretty funny.
They do. They're really good at it.
Okay. And speaking of my daughter's PC the couple of minutes ago, so... It's an interesting problem developed. Let's call it an issue. It's not a problem. So she just graduated from college, and I picked up a new MacBook Air for her to replace her four-year-old MacBook Air, which I'm happy to say I'm going to inherit, so I can replace my 2010 MacBook Air with a brand shiny new 2013 MacBook Air. So she's got a brand new MacBook Air, and because she wanted another Mac. She didn't want a Windows PC, which would have, quite frankly, been a lot cheaper. And faster and more storage and, you know, whatever for a much lesser price. But her graduate program requires that you use Office 365 for Windows, not on a Mac. And my belief is, they don't specify it, but my belief is it's because they probably need add-ons for Excel. And Office for Mac doesn't support macros, as I recall.
Yeah, that seems like it's probably the most logical reason.
Yeah. So what I ended up doing is spending even more money. Got Parallels Desktop 12. By the way, for those of you parents who have kids in K through 12 or college or grad school, if they have a .edu email address, you can get Parallels Desktop for half price for $40.
So, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or if you're staff or faculty. Or, you know,
I specialize in .edu addresses. So.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a good deal. I could not find an educational discount for Microsoft Windows itself. So I paid full price for Windows 10 Home Edition, and downloaded the ISO and virtualized that, and it went pretty well. I have to say, it's been when did I write the book on this? Literally, this was like 2006, 2007, I think, right after the Intel Max came out, and it's a lot easier now. Let me tell you. Especially since I don't have to worry about RAM. You know, back when I had a gig or 2 gigs of RAM, I'd think, well, how much RAM can I give this Windows box? Now I just said, they require a minimum 4 gigabytes of RAM for Windows machines. She has an 8 gigabyte MacBook Air, so I gave 4 gigabytes to the VM when it's up and running. And the installation went really a lot more smoothly than I thought, and certainly a lot more smoothly than I remembered from, you know, versions 1 and 2, which are like, 11, 10 versions ago, whatever. And then her school provides the Office 365 license, so she was able to, you know, log in with her EDU credentials and download that and install it, so that didn't cost anything. So that was nice. But anyway, it seems to be up and running. I still need to do a few things, like configure backup separately for the Windows stuff, I think. I don't know. I got to go look at this. You probably use OneDrive for that, since they'll probably use Office 365 for everything. And check on the security. Trying to debate whether or not the Windows built-in stuff is Defender or whatever it's called is enough. Might install a third party, but haven't decided which one yet. Anyway, it's been years and years since I did a VM on a Mac, so it was a really nice experience, much nicer than the old days. You know, it's it's like in the old days when everybody had to be a coder to use a computer. Now you don't need to be a coder. And, you know, in the old days, to configure a VM on your PC or Mac, or server for that matter, was like a major hassle. And now it's like a boop, 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 click, 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 and you're kind of done.
Yeah, you're reminding me that my Windows 10 virtual machine on this MacBook I'm using right now, I haven't booted it and let it update in a while, so I'll probably do that after our podcast. I don't use it too often, but when I do use it, I don't want it to need 700 hours of updates. So
the other thing I noticed, I didn't try it, but you know, when I was getting ready to configure Windows or install Windows for her, and Microsoft, you really need a discount price for people to VM their Windows machines if they're at some kind of educational situation, like a student or faculty, whatever. But at any rate, when I was doing, just before they started the configuration, I noticed they offered to install kind of prepackaged installations, not Windows, of course. But, you know, they said, hey, if you want to install Chromium or a couple versions of Linux, click this and boom, we'll do it for you. So I thought that was pretty cool. Not sure why you would install Chromium as a VM unless you're a developer, I guess, of some kind, and you want to, you know, bang against Chromium OS to see if it'll work on a Chromebook, and you don't have a Chromebook. But I thought that was really interesting. It was especially nice to see. I think it had Ubuntu and a couple other Linux distros that you could kind of just click a button and install versus, you know, go find it and download the ISO and all that stuff. So that was really, really nice. And it's pretty fast. I think very start good. To finish, including buying it, took 2 hours.
Cool.
Yeah. And downloading and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. Let's see. Next up. Oh, this is another thing. I was going to ask you about this, John, since you've been in a number of different places, as have I. So I've never, of course, worked for Goldman Sachs, the giant world international banking firm, but I don't think you have either. But, you know, like a lot of fancy-dancy companies, they have a dress code. Mm-hmm. Now, you work at a university where I assume there's no dress code except to be dressed somehow.
Yeah, for faculty especially, we really rebel against anything that looks like a formal dress code. We hate it, and we will find out ways to go against it if you ask us to do it. So, yeah. But I have worked other places where, you know, you do feel a little bit more of a need for a certain kind of dress code or style. In fact, that's why famously all of my dress shirts are banded collar shirts, because that makes it impossible for me to wear a tie. So I have to wear a dress shirt. I can't wear a tie with it because a tie doesn't go with that dress shirt.
Well, they don't say what Goldman Sachs dress code is, but presumably it's maybe a tie or, you know, like a long sleeve shirt or something. But apparently, of the 33,000 employees in that large firm, a third of them are like engineer types, which surprised me. I thought there would be like, you know, finance types and so forth. But a third of them are engineers, according to this Reuters article. And they, in an attempt to attract techies, they're relaxing the dress code for techies. So
yeah, I find that interesting and honestly common sense. You know, as a person who does any sort of tech support, especially if you're the guy who's running around installing machines and fixing things, you need a certain amount of things that you could easily put in things like cargo pants or, you know, and that's not something that I would want to have to tell someone who is, for example, their entire day job is reimaging computers at employees' desks, that the different credentials they need or USB drives they need or whatever they need. Nope, can't carry those. You have to carry, you know, an extra bag or something, because you can't wear something to carry it, or you need to have a suit and tie for, you know, reimaging a computer.
You can't wear a personal wear with accommodating storage, which is what geeks like us really need, storage.
Very true.
Of the physical three-dimensional type. Aaron, I found that kind of interesting. So those of you who are staying away from, and I understand they pay very well, staying away from those kind of firms, you know, they are kind of coming into the 21st century with this whole dress code thing, at least for the techie side. So that's pretty good. I worked at a place once where it really didn't have a dress code, But when we met with, was it third parties or customers? I can't remember, one or the other. Basically, people who don't work for the same company, we had to wear a suit and tie, which is a giant pain. And hot, especially in the summer, especially in Dallas. But anyway, that was ago and far away. oh, by the way, since you work in university, you probably are too young to remember this story. But I remember years and years and years ago, there was an undergrad at UC Berkeley who used to go to class every day naked. So apparently UC Cal, or as they called it, I guess, Cal doesn't have a dress code, or didn't have a dress code for their students at that time.
I don't really know of any university that has enforced – none of the universities I've ever been at has an enforced dress code. Yeah. In fact, my current university, I'm sure there is something in there that's a dress code for students. But we have a dress code document that basically boils down to ask your supervisor and try to take a shower every so often. I mean, it's not a very formal – it's very loosely written. But I don't know if the students really have any, which is why I actually have in my mind examples of extreme – I guess just strange choices of dress code that I've seen my students do over time. So those seem to stand out when they violate a dress code that we don't actually have.
All right. So next up, John added something. I see this. Week 2 with iPad Pro 10.5.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about this last week, and you and I are now on Week 2 with our new iPads, and I just wanted to check in and see if there was anything that you found particularly interesting. For me, it was, do I miss my iPad mini?
Oh, okay.
I have not used that for a week now. And really, I do find the iPad Pro to be a little heavier, so it's harder to lay in bed and read by holding it up. But I can still lay on my stomach and read with it propped up on my pillow, which is one way that I often use my iPad. And so that's really been the only difference. It is kind of nice taking the same machine with me to work every day, as well as the one I'll be laying in bed reading on the night before. That's kind of a nice thing. So I hardly ever take my Surface Pro out when I'm at home. It usually stays in my work bag unless I need it for something. But the iPad Pro will come in and out of both work and home environment. I did buy a smart cover for it so that when it's at home, it doesn't have the keyboard cover on it. It just has a regular smart cover. Kind of reduce the bulk a little bit, but still keep the protection of a cover on it. And so I've been happy with it. What sort of things have you been doing with yours other than your doodles?
Well, one of the nice things is not so much that it's iPad Pro that makes a difference, because I moved from the first-gen iPad Pro to the, I guess, second-gen small iPad Pro. I went from 9.7 to 10.5. But the only thing I noticed, and it is, again, it's not because of the upgrade design or anything. It says I simply bought a model with more storage. I went from 32 gigs of storage to 256 gigs of storage. And I don't worry about installing apps anymore. And, you know, you go, what are you talking about that? Why are you worried about it? Some apps are huge. Like the Microsoft Office apps, they're gigantic. You know, if you install PowerPoint, Excel, and Word, I think that's over a gig.
Or Microsoft releases apps that are bloated? Gee, I would have never thought. That's just shocking to me.
And then there are games. And then there's storage. So, you know, the other podcast I do on occasion with Jay Stone is the Comics Views podcast. And comics are high-resolution images, essentially. And there are, 24 to 32 pages per issue of high-res images. You store a couple of those, and all of a sudden your storage is gone. So, for me, the main difference is that having been smarter this time and maybe less cheap, less of a cheapskate, and I bought something with enough storage not to worry about it for a while at least. So that's been the main thing. And it's as our friends in the Northwest might say, it's wicked fast. And that's even compared to the first-gen Pros. Like, I think I mentioned it the first time, last week, the first impression is, wow, this thing is way faster than I expected. It's noticeably faster, and I knew it was faster. I just didn't think it'd be noticeably faster.
It is much faster for me than the iPad mini.
Oh, yeah.
So that really, because the iPad Mini over the last few years, about the last year, I've really started to notice it's getting long in the tooth, in a sense. It's just kind of slower and slower. So I have noticed the speed increase.
Now, you had an iPad Mini 3, is that correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The 4 is not so bad. I've got the 4, and it's the current model, by the way. You know, my daughter moved from an iPad 3, which was called the new iPad back then, mm-hmm. 4 years ago, to the iPad 4, which I guess got a slight processor refresh a couple of months ago. But essentially, it's the same machine, a slightly faster processor. And there, you know, I really wish there was an iPad Mini 5 or iPad Mini Pro or something mm-hmm. that supported Apple Pencil for her, but, you know, that was, and she didn't
want the only way that, I will probably up to get an iPad Mini again would be if it did support Apple Pencil.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's about it. You know, I've been kind of looking, I guess we'll see in a couple of months. When iOS 11 comes out, I think then the faster processor in the 10.5 iPad Pro will really shine compared to even last mm-hmm. year's iPad Pro. So looking forward to that. It's just really nice to have enough storage. I have to say that, you know, I didn't want to spend a lot of money, as I said earlier, when I bought the 9.7-inch iPad Pro because, well, I don't have a lot of money, so that's reason number one. But reason number two was I just didn't think I would be doing that much with it. I mean, I had an iPad 2, which I was graduating from, with 64 gigs of RAM. So it actually had more RAM. But I hadn't really used much of it. And mm-hmm. I didn't expect to. But boy, the iPad Pro is such a nice machine that I just started to use it a lot more. I just had to turn around outside. Yep. I thought it was raining. But we are expecting a bit of rain here in Hawaii. But yeah, how about anything else? Have you tried any new apps that are pro specific or really needs the horsepower of the pro?
Nothing really. I mean, I do have Procreate on it, which you use, and I played mm-hmm. around with it a little bit, but I haven't done too much with it. Mm-hmm. But I do have the full Office suite on there, and I still have some things in Pages and the other, you know, in the Apple Office suite, and I have some of the Google apps on there too. So it's just sort of my everything spare device. I did start installing some of the more geekier things on there this week. So things like Prompt, so I can get into my SSH servers, a few other, you know, like VNC connection apps and things like that. So it's becoming more and more my iPad.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable device. Glad to hear that we are both enjoying it. And no buyer's remorse, I should say, at all.
Nope. And actually got really decent prices for the iPads I sold off. So I'm happy about that, too.
Yeah. I am still waiting for a case to arrive. So, you know, as I mentioned several times last week, I think, I just had a bad experience with the quality of the smart keyboard for the iPad Pro 9.7, which really wore out quickly. Not the keys, but the outside. So I decided not to spend another $150, whatever it costs, mm-hmm. to buy that. And I'm not going to get any cover keyboard this time. So I went and bought a cheap $13 cover from Amazon on July 7th. Today's July 15th. It still has not shipped. I am a Prime customer, Amazon. What's the deal here?
You know. I know the feeling sometimes with Amazon, you know, wondering when is this going to show up?
And of course, there's no such thing as two-day shipping to Hawaii. So once it ships, it's going to take a week to get here by, you know, slow boat to wherever and then here. So at any rate, I still don't have a cover. I may just go to the Apple store and see if they have a smart cover and just buy one just to have something to protect my screen for the next couple of weeks until my cheap cover arrives. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of stupid to spend, you know, $40 or $50 to wait for your $12 cover to arrive. But there you go. The new cover, the $12 cover, by the way, the reason why I'm still kind of interested in it, it's an actual full cover versus just the screen, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly. And it has a holder from Apple Pencil, if I recall
correctly. Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, but it's been over a week since I ordered it, so I'm sort of forgetting what I actually bought.
I've had that too. I just actually, as you were talking about that, I thought, I ordered something like a week ago. I should look up where it is. And so I just did that with another retailer that isn't Amazon. So.
Okay. And by the way, tip for those of you with the Amazon Echo, you know, if you have an Amazon Echo and you order something, Prime or otherwise, you can say, you know, keyword, where's my stuff? And it will tell you. In fact, let me try that with mine. It doesn't actually name the object, so. Alexa, where's my stuff?
A shipment for editor's order, placed Tuesday, July 11th, should arrive Friday, July 21st.
Lies. Lies. But it didn't mention the earlier stuff you noticed. I guess that was the last thing I ordered, which was Amazon Prime Day. I did order a new microphone. So I'm currently using a Blue. Is that the brand? I think it's Blue. Yeah, Blue Snowball. Yeah, mm-hmm. Blue Snowball microphone. And I ordered the Blue something else microphone. Yeti.
Blue Yeti?
Yeah. Blue Yeti. Yeah. So it's silver colored, not blue. Then that's the brand name, not the color. So I'm hoping to get that. And, you know, I mentioned this before. I have no real remorse. Well, I guess a little bit. First of all, the Blue Snowball does exactly what it says. It's a pretty decent microphone. I've got a spit shield in front of it. And I think it sounds pretty good for the price. I think I bought it for like $30 or $35 on sale on Amazon. Mm-hmm. But one thing it doesn't have is a mute button. So, you know, when I sneeze or cough or whatever, I got either mute Skype itself or just, you know, kind of move far away, which is kind of annoying. So I'm looking forward to having a mute button again. Also, the Snowball is huge. It's about 4 inches deep because it's a ball, right? It's a sphere. So it's gigantic. It's got this gigantic tripod under it that takes up a whole heck of a lot of space and a very small table space I use for podcasting. The Yeti is not exactly tiny, but I think it takes up less square footage on your square inches on your tabletop. So I'm hoping it'll be a lot more convenient to use for podcasting.
Now, what I hope is you get the newer version of the Yeti. So I did buy the Yeti a few years ago, maybe about a year ago now. And the version I got was not compatible with newer Macs.
Oh, no.
And when I tried to contact, I think Blue Yeti support or Amazon support, something like that, I said, you know, I'd like to return it and get the one that it does support.
Yeah.
The one that works. They basically told me, well, we have no way of knowing which one you'd get. So I actually returned it. So hopefully all those old ones are out of the supply chain now. And you'll get one of the new ones. Because I've been eyeing one of those for a while as well. They look like nice microphones.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case. And we'll find out in a couple of years when it arrives.
Yeah, and then if you have to return it, it might take a few more years before you get your refund.
Right, right. So I'm looking forward to getting it. I'm also looking forward to getting an iPad case. Since I've got it in my old Surface Pro bag. And so I bought the Surface Pro is my work machine, but I bought my own bag for it. Because it works too cheap to buy one, I guess. But so I bought my own bag for it, but I decided, like many things, like we were just talking about, I needed more pockets on my bag to carry a charger and stuff. So this was just a, you know, slip case kind of thing with a shoulder strap. So I brought that home, bought another one from Amazon, took that one to work, and it's, you know, huge. It's for a 13-inch device, so it fits the iPad Pro just fine with 10.95. It's kind of loose in there, but at least it protects the screen when it's, you know, from dust and so forth when it's just sitting around.
Very good.
Yeah. I need to do some more testing with the iPad Pro with some apps and maybe post to my gossipwalrus.com blog where I do a lot of my doodle kind of posts. And I haven't even started up the other blog that you and Don mentioned in the episode that will not be commented on again.
Yes.
Okay, so you got something, your adventure with something or other in our show notes.
Yeah, I have a last thing that you might find interesting, and our listeners may find interesting if they have to do any sort of this work. But Todd and I both have a background in psychology. We both know a little bit about stats, and we both use R, which is the statistical language most favored by pirates. And one of the cool things about R is there's this product out there called RStudio, which is a very nice graphical user interface for R, an IDE in a sense, integrated development environment. But the same company that does RStudio also has a product called Shiny Server. All of these are open source. There is a commercial version of RStudio if you want it, and there's a commercial version of Shiny Server, but the open source does just fine for my purposes. But what I wrote this week and what I'm going to be writing this fall for some of my classes is actually little web apps that allow you to calculate basic stats on a variety of data sets, things like that. And this week it was just a simple little thing where my students could enter in their data from an experiment they ran, and then it would plot it out on scatter plots and then do a quick calculation Nice. For them. And that took about maybe 6 or 7 lines of code in Shiny to get it up and running. So it's really a nice solution for mobile users. It does scale well for mobile if you use the built-in layouts that it has. So you don't have to worry about, well, will this look good on the desktop but mm-hmm. not on the laptop or not on a tablet? Mm-hmm. So if you need to build little computational apps, in a sense, so maybe you build savings calculators or you build little applets. Like, if you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could just send someone this Excel spreadsheet, but they wouldn't even know how to put it in here and run the macro that calculates right. this or that. You might look into this. It was a quick setup, and as I put in our show notes, it's all open source. It's running on a Debian server. That's a virtual machine that I pay about $10 a year for because it's a low-end virtual machine. No complaints, but a really cool setup. It's RStudio with Shiny server.
Right. And for those of you who don't have a server, paid for otherwise, you might be able to run a free VM. Like, I don't know if VirtualBox is still free since Oracle got a hold of it.
But, it is.
Yeah, so maybe VirtualBox, virtualize some version of Linux, which is free. You don't have to buy it like I did with Windows to virtualize it. And you can run a tiny little server on your desktop to test all this stuff if you are so interested. And these days, you know, with... I had to buy a new notebook last year, I think, when my old Dell broke. I think it came with like 12 gigabytes of RAM.
Hmm.
So, you know, I can set aside 4 gigs of RAM for a little mini server and it'd still be just really happy.
Very true.
Yeah. Okay, John has to run off soon, so we will end this podcast. We're kind of getting to that point of the year. We should talk to our friends about coming on for a guest panel, see what they have to say. Is there anything else going on this time of the year? I guess Microsoft had its partner conference. I'm not sure what else is going on this time of the year. Oh, I guess Esri had its user conference for JS folks. Don't know if any of our friends went. I didn't go to that one this year. Well, we'll see what they're up to. Let's figure out which of our friends might be available and invite them on for a podcast or two before the summer ends. Okay, folks, well, once again, it looks like Mobius Podcast is done, and the new Audio Hijack 3, which I had so many issues with early on, is solved thanks to Rogue Amoeba's tech support. Thank you, Rogue Amoeba. They said, just click this instead, and boom, it worked. Yeah. Alrighty. We'll talk to you next time, folks.